The Ryder Cup on Off The Ball. Brought to you by Now TV. Only pay for the days you want and stream all 10 Sky Sports channels with the Now TV Sky Sports Pass.
We're here with Paul McGinley. It's all done, it's all over. Give us your initial reaction. I'm sure you're very happy and great to see the European Tour win ultimately. Why have they won is the big question everyone's teasing through right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great week, first of all. I think we raised the bar in terms of hostings of Ryder Cup as a European Tour. I think everything was 30% bigger than it's ever been before in terms of stands, hospitality. The crowds were bigger than it's ever been at a Ryder Cup before. I think we moved it to a new level in terms of staging. I think the European team moved it to a new level in terms of executing a plan. That was pretty clinical in how they went about it, and they worked things in their favour, and a deserved success for the European team.
Are you disappointed with the Americans and the challenge they put up to the Europeans here?
I think you have to say that because the top players didn't stand up. I mean, you know, you take DJ, you take Ricky, you take Tiger, you take Phil. Between them, they won 1 point, you know. And, you know, at this level, you know, I've studied all the stats in Ryder Cups, and generally what you're looking for, the ratio is 60% from your top players and kind of 30-40% from, you know, the guys who were either young in the team, rookies, or just, you know, maybe their second appearance. That's normally the ratio. So you're relying heavily on your big guys to stand up. The reason why we win Ryder Cups and why we have won Ryder Cups over a number of years is, you know, the Westwoods, the Olazabals, the Darren Clarks, the Montes, you know, you can go on and on. We all know that the centre, the fulcrum of that team. And that's why we win. And then guys like me, who will be the second half of the team, we'll throw in an odd point here and there, but the fulcrum comes from there.
One question I haven't heard a satisfactory answer to. So the course and the course setup, and we know about the narrow fairways, and we saw what the rough did, and sometimes being in the rough was effectively like being out of the hole at times.
Yeah,
I accept all that, and I accept that the PGA Tour players aren't as used to it, and you made the point about the crowd being further back, so the rough was up and lush. I accept all of that, and I know they're not used to it. What I don't understand is how, with often not a driver off a tee, these world-class players did not adapt or acclimatize. They won the first session 3-1. So, I mean, the course, yes, but I mean, like, they just must have played terribly, no?
Well, there's two things that I'll say on that, Joe. First of all, the first morning was quite calm. Right? The weather didn't, the wind didn't blow. That suited the Americans because your crosswind's trying to hit these fairways. And then in the afternoon, the winds came. That was a factor in our 4-0 win that second afternoon. And then we carried on the next day. The wind blew the second day pretty much all day. That was certainly a factor. The crosswind spooked them because the practice rounds here were perfect weather. In fact, it was really, really hot. And then that's the first thing, and it's to understand. Interesting today, when the weather died, the wind died, that things in America looked a lot more comfortable with the golf course than they did in the first 2 days. The second thing is, and it was cold as well. Those Friday, Saturday were cold, particularly in the mornings. And then the other thing is match play. You know, Jose Maria Olazabal, his line that was inscribed in all our heads and it was everywhere, was seize the moment. And, you know, that, I know that's a line that we hear in sport and in all other things, is how important it is. But seize the moment is particularly applicable when it comes to match play. There's match play moments. And I think we seem to be better versed and understanding the moment. And, you know, why is Ian Poulter such a fantastic match player? Why has he got such a great record in Ryder Cups? It's because he understands, he feels it, he senses it, he knows the importance of a shot. He knows when his opponent is a little bit reeling on the ropes, and he knows how to exert pressure. Match play is about exerting pressure on your opponent. There's a skill set involved in match play that nobody seems to talk about. We take, you know, guys who are top of the order merit and saying, these are the guys because they're the best players. Yeah, they're the best players in that exam. But what about the exam of Paris National with heavy rough and also the exam of match play? And that's where the golden stuff is.
It's interesting. I mean, I was just in at the US press conference and there were no dramatics a la 4 years ago. Phil Mickelson was pointedly asked, was he happy with everything? He said he was thrilled with everything. And right across the 12, bar Spieth and Fowler, Spieth and Reed, which we'll come to maybe in a second, they were a fairly united bunch. They were like, we gave it our best. Jim gave us the best chance to execute the plan. We just didn't quite do it. But it's great and we can't wait for 2 years' time. That was the American sense. They were very united. And I feel like they were into it, and Furyk made the point that a lot of them did turn up in July. I know it's not tournament golf, but turned up in July for a practice day, and Justin Thomas obviously played the Paris Open. So all of that was going on, and they put up a fairly good showing in the press conference. It was noticeable on the Sky telecast. A few times you looked at them, certainly yesterday, didn't love the body language, didn't love the energy about this team. So how do you equate them saying all the right stuff and we're a happy family versus, I don't know, when you say the body language, what are you talking about and how do you equate those two things? They're an interesting team to figure out, actually.
Yeah, they are. You know, body language is really important in match play. When you've got your opponent, you're staring at your opponent one-on-one. I mean, the best exponent of body language we've seen in modern times is Tiger Woods. He puts on the red on a Sunday. He's got an aura. He's got a sense of invincibility. I've been in his company in situations like that. He plays on that aura. He intimidates with that aura. He knows how to play the crowd. He walks around with the shoulders back. I am Tiger Woods. And you can sense it. It's like, don't get in my patch. This is my domain. I'm an actor on the biggest stage, and this is what I do. And even if things aren't going well, he still has that aura. I didn't see that from the leaders in the Europe, from the American team. You know, and I look at the leaders, and the leaders, as I say, the leaders create normally 60% of your points. And even if they're not winning, they can still contribute in other ways. And they contribute by talking to a rookie while he's playing. They can contribute with what they say in the team room at night. They can contribute with their body language, their personification. I'm all right, Jack. We're good. Now, one of the best guys by a million miles in our team room was Monty. Now, we all know what Monty's like, and we see him and we think, okay, he's not really dynamic and he's that. That's not the case. I mean, an ultimate competitor. But what a team loons. I used to look around in team rooms and I'd see Lee Westwood and I'd look around and I'd see Monty and I'd see Olazabal and I'd see Garcia and I go, man, I'm glad these guys are on the team, because they were there. They were like, bring this on. You know, there, you're a young rookie, you're just starting out and your first Ryder Cup and you're looking around and you're sensing, oh God, this is going to be tough. You know, America's so good. They got all these big golfing CVs and that. And then you look around and you look how comfortable they are and how much they're relishing the next few days. And you know, we're going to be good. This is how we're going to do it. This is what we do. And how they speak and how they project themselves is really important, because that's what lifts the lower half of the team.
So you have your worries about the American team in that department, do you?
Well, they didn't perform and their body language wasn't particularly good. Did Dustin Johnson have the same aura about him that he has when he plays a PGA Tour event? Certainly Tiger Woods didn't. I mean, we all can see that. You know, he walked around like an old man. He didn't look like the Tiger Woods we see even last week in Atlanta.
He kind of admitted it in the press conference, said, look, I've played 7 out of 9 weeks.
Yeah, he was jaded, there's no doubt about that. And I think they're scheduling, you know, when we look at the preparation for the Americans, I don't think they're ready for this exam, but I also think they weren't ready in terms of their scheduling. It was at the end of the FedEx. Obviously, the FedEx had all the priority in their minds and in their hearts to a large extent. As much as they talk about the Ryder Cup, their focus and all of their focus is on that. Interesting, one of their best performers this week, although he got beaten badly today, was Jordan Spieth, who had the week off last week. I think our team were fresher. We had more vibrancy about us. We had better body language. And that just wasn't related to our momentum going away. You know, out of the blocks, we looked like we were. We had a different vibe about us and a different energy.
The tales of why Europe won and the key moments in the team meetings will probably emerge tonight and over the coming days. But you said you felt they executed their plan perfectly.
Europe did.
So what do you think the plan was, and how did it differ from Gleneagles 4 years ago?
Well, it started with the golf course setup. Now, Thomas, what he did in the golf course setup is, and putting the ropes as far back as he did. I mean, one of the things that annoys me is to see a guy bail it into the crowd, not shout four, because they know it's going to stop the ball if they do. It stops the ball. They're on the hard pan. They got a straight shot into the green. They go up to the guy. Oh, sorry about that. Sorry, I didn't mean to hit it.
Sign a glove, though.
You know. Sign a glove, yeah. Sometimes they do shout four, in fairness, but a lot of times there's not. And, you know, they want to stop the ball from going further into the trees. Now they're on the hard pan. They got a straight shot into the green. By moving the ropes back as far as they did, now you've got 25 yards from the edge of the fairway before you get to the crowd. Now, these guys are wild, but they're not 25 yards plus another probably 15 to the middle of the fairway, another 20 to the middle of. Now you're 45 from the middle of the fairway to the right side and the left side. They're not that wild.
Yeah.
So that's why they were so punished this week, and that's why Thomas was ready for that. And I don't think they set that exam very well of applying themselves to the golf club. I mean, how many times did they miss a fairway with... It wasn't a driver. I mean, they're only hitting four drivers around here. They're missing with rescues. Or missing with irons. You know,
that doesn't make sense to me. They're the best players in the world. Okay, Phil admitted in the press conference he didn't have his best stuff, and he was on the range the whole time trying to find it. Phil hooking one into the water with an iron. There were iron shots and hybrid shots that were not finding fairways. No. I still haven't heard a good explanation for that. crosswinds, everything else fine.
It's because they don't do it. They're not used to hitting. They're not used to positional play. They don't play positional golf courses. They play, there's 14 holes that are par fours and par fives, and they hit driver. Certainly 12 of those, and the other two times they're hitting 3-wood.
Yeah.
They don't play positional golf courses. You know, I was saying quietly to a couple of guys behind the scenes leading into this Ryder Cup, I'm really hoping Zach Johnson, Matt Kuchar, Kevin Kisner don't show form the next 3 or 4 weeks and become picks and make their way in, because they're the guys that would sit this exam really well.
That could be Jim Furyk's big regret ultimately. When you look at his picks versus Bjorn's picks and you tot the points, you don't want to, I'd say you especially don't want to come down hard on Furyk, a friend and a fellow captain, you know how hard the job is, but when he goes away,
yeah,
I'm sure he'll look at his picks. He can't say they worked out well.
It would have been a ballsy thing to do, to disregard Tony Finau, yeah. Tiger Woods.
You have to pick Tiger,
Phil Mickelson, even though his form wasn't good. And
DeChambeau,
who'd won 2 of the FedEx. Imagine the headlines that would have got if he'd gone, no, I'm picking Zach and I'm picking Kuch. But what I was saying was, I was hoping that they weren't going to be those four guys, so that they were logical picks.
Yeah, it would have been tough for him to say to the American press, but wait and you see the course in France, it's about positional play. That, you know, that would, nuance would get lost.
That it would get lost, and it would have been a ballsy play. But I was hoping that they weren't going to be the guys that kind of elevated. Now, you look at our picks. Sergio's very straight off the tee, probably one of the best drivers we have. Henrik Stenson's leading driving accuracy on the PGA Tour. Yeah. Very rarely is he a driver anyway. You know, Ian Poulter, absolutely perfect around here. Yeah. You know, positional player. I mean, we had a great stat on Sky during the week. The worst position a European member had ever finished in the French Open was 12th. So we all have form around here. Wow. We've all played this golf course so many times. And all of us, the worst we had ever finished on this golf course was 12th. So we've all had some kind of success on it. We figured a way and a plan of playing it.
Yeah.
Strange week for Rory McIlroy. He played all 5 matches yet again at a Ryder Cup, ended up winning 2 points, but lost here in 18 against Justin Thomas earlier. A lot of missed putts again. What was your overall sense of his performance?
I thought he was tired, a bit like the American team. He was jaded. I think he didn't come in with the same vibrancy. I thought there was a little bit of a hangover from his performance on the last round of the FedEx last week, you know, when he played with Tiger in the last round and it went badly for him and he had a poor day. I think he came in on a little bit of a low on the back of that, and he nearly got going. Sergio dragged him up on the second day and he nearly got going, and then he kind of flatlined a little bit again. I thought he played decent today. He didn't play great. He was up against, I mean, this guy, watch this guy. This guy, Justin Thomas, he is a superb competitor. Not just is he a brilliant ball striker and a big hitter and all that. He has got a heart of a lion. Yeah. Watch this guy go forward in the game.
He's chipping in and everything.
He's competitive. You know, when I talk about competitive instincts, I can sense it. I can watch it. I'm looking for the moments. I'm looking for moments, big moments, and if they can do it. And there was none bigger moment leading the team out when the Ryder Cup was a little bit rocky from a European perspective and looking good for an American. This guy had to win his game. He had the honour on 17. McIlroy made an unbelievable up and down on 17. This guy stood up in the 18th and he took out driver. And I said to the guys, I was watching it in the green room, and I said, this is not the play. There's nowhere to go with driver for a guy at this distance. And he hit it down a sliver of fairway and said, okay, now let's see what you got, Rory. That's what forced the issue. When I talk about match play moments, that forced the issue on Rory. That put a massive amount of pressure on Rory. And Rory made the right call. 3-wood was the right call for him. It wasn't to follow him up with the same drive. It was a 3-wood. But, you know, the pressure was huge at that moment. And a leak to the right, plug lie, and game over.
Cruel and unfair as it is, one of the lasting images of McIlroy from this Ryder Cup will be him turning to the crowd and saying, I can putt. Heat of the moment, he might regret doing that. I mean, the putter was a bit of an issue today. We just thought it was noticeable. If someone had shouted Rory McIlroy in the crowd, you can't drive the ball, he wouldn't have even risen to it. But it's clearly...
the crowd would have been laughed out of the place.
Well, yeah, but it's clearly a sore point. It clearly was something that really got his back up. And, you know, funny enough, it kind of distracted him almost yesterday. But in broad terms, what's he going to do in the off-season now, Paul, do you think, with his game?
Well, that's with Rory, his putting stats have been actually pretty good. He's pretty good. I mean, you look at his stats, and I've trawled through all of these stats. I do them all the time, particularly for this Ryder Cup, for all the 12 players on the European team. His putting stats are actually really good compared to where they've been in previous years. He holds some good putts. There's not a whole lot wrong with his putting. What Rory has lost compared to what he had before, I call it pointy elbows, is that competitive edge that he's had earlier in his career. It's not quite the same. The other guys have raised the bar, they're putting it up to him. Guys like Justin Thomas, we just saw it on the 18th hole there. You know, he hit the drive as long as Rory McIlroy would do. Rory used to dominate guys and intimidate them with his driving. So the other guys have raised the bar, and that's made things difficult for Rory. He hasn't got his head around that yet, and he hasn't, you know, and I keep saying, you know, those pointy elbows, that's what he had. He has that instinct in him. It's lying dormant at the moment. It's hard to say it's lying dormant because look at the year he's had. I mean, there's only probably two or three guys in the whole of golf who have created more world ranking points than Rory McIlroy this year. His level of consistency is probably better than it's ever been. He's just not winning as much as he often did.
Kill him with our expectations, I guess.
Well, there is. There's a lot of that goes around him with the expectations. There's no doubt about that. And playing number one today, he had a massive amount of pressure on him. A lot of expectation on him playing out in that number one position.
Yeah. I guess just a last question or two because we're all tight for time. Are we now at a point where, with this home and away business, you talked about the way Bjorn set up the course, and we know 2 years ago there were pins in the middle of greens and the course was set up perfectly for Mickelson to hit the ball wherever he wanted. Yeah. So, I don't know, it doesn't excite me as much if we have this big contrast back and forth. If both America and Team Europe have perfected the art of setting up the course to suit their teams, then I think that takes away something from the integrity of the tournament, and I wonder if that is something that the Ryder Cup might have to look at.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe, and that could be the case. I think there's going to be a lot of fallout from this Ryder Cup in that regard. There's going to be discussions.
Coach Harmon was making the point on commentary with you yesterday that the exact thing that the USPGA Tour need to look at the type of courses. But then at the same time, it's once every 4 years that the Ryder Cup's in America. Why would they change the entire ethos of the tour and how they set up their courses for what is essentially 1 week?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I said it in commentary as well. You know, 90% of matches in the last 10 years, 70% of Ryder Cups in the last number of years have been won by the home team over a long period of time. 90% have been won by the home team in President's Cup, Ryder Cups and Solheim Cups in the last 10 years. Home advantage is huge in all kinds of team events. It's not just the crowd. Yes, the crowd is really important and you ride that wave of it. It's tailoring the golf course. This, of all the golf courses that we've ever had on a European, yes, the rough was up this week, but there's also, without any rough, if you put no rough on this golf course, there's still only four holes that the big hitters can hit driver on. Yeah. That's the kind of golf course it is. It's a positional kind of golf course. The one that's closer to it on the PGA Tour, the one most similar in my mind to it, is Sawgrass. Sawgrass, and it's no surprise, Webb Simpson, I called it on TV before he went out, Justin Rose is playing arguably the strongest player on the American team for one reason. This guy knows how to sit this exam, Webb Simpson, and he's won the TPC around there. Justin's in for a really tough game, and that's exactly what happened. That's the kind of player that can sit, he's comfortable on that kind of exam, you know, and I think...
Will we get a neutral setup if this situation is exacerbated over the next years?
A lot of negotiation. That's a lot of negotiation there, Joe. I mean, you want to be Kofi Annan to negotiate that one out. You know, there's already been a commonality going on with the pin positions, with the Americans putting them in the middle of the greens, and, you know, behind the scenes, I think the pin positions were given to both teams at the start of the week. Not exactly which hole day they will be on, but they were both given where the five pin positions.
And who chooses them? Does Bjorn choose the pin positions?
There's an independent the referee from the PGA European Tour, and there's a referee from the PGA of America. Right. And between them, those two, they decide on the five pins. Both teams were issued with the five pins, and then they just decided on which day which. Now, maybe are they going to do something like that in course setup? I don't know. I'm not involved in those. That's something for the next captain to discuss. But certainly, we go to Hazeltine. I mean, look what happened in Hazeltine. I mean, they took so much pride and delight in telling us all about how they set it up to suit themselves and how they cut out some trees. And now, you know, and that's why they can't cry now about what we've done to them.
Funny, I'm seeing some crying, and it's not so much, oh, it's unfair on us, but the few mumblings I've seen on social media from some golf writers and various people is, well, like, this is rubbish golf. Like, I don't want to see Rory McIlroy hit an iron off a par five twice. I don't want golf where if you're 10 yards off the fairway, you can't find the green. Actually, it's boring golf, and we don't want to see golf where you have to hack out sideways. So that's the narrative which is kind of beginning to start. I can see what they mean. I get that.
I don't get that because otherwise you're looking at 15, 20 under par. It's a birdie fest. Just keep going for it every day, every week. Play aggressive. I mean, these American guys in particular are incredibly aggressive. The way they think, the way they play. And we made them think on the back foot.
So the rough wasn't too penal?
For me, one of the skills in being a professional golfer is the ability to hit it straight. Not just long, straight.
Sure.
And there's been so much of a focus in modern times, the guys have figured out, man, if I can hit it far, it doesn't matter if I'm straight. Look at the accuracy. I mean, I don't know this exact stat, but I don't think any one of the 12 players on the PGA Tour, on the American team were ranked in the top 30 in driving accuracy. Any one of the 12. You know, that's an indictment of what the modern game is rewarding and what has become. Do we all want to see this? You know, the US Open, I was so disappointed when I went to Shinnecock this year. For me, the big miss in Shinnecock was not the fact that the greens lost a little bit on the Saturday and all this debate. It was the fact that the fairways were a joke how wide they were. I walked on doing my prep walking around. I walked on these green fairways and I said, I have never seen a fairway this big in my life. And I've never seen a fairway as big. Erin Hills the year before. On the 10th hole, I looked at this fairway and I thought, is this the right fairway? I had to check it. I walked on the fairway. And I looked back in the tee and I looked at the green and I said, have I walked up the wrong fairway here? And I paced it wide. It was 84. Listen to this. 84 yards wide. Are you kidding me?
Par four.
500 yards. 84 yards wide. You know, that's not what golf's about.
Yeah.
Now, back in the days when Curtis Strange, Nick Faldo, and all of those kind of players were playing, when they went to sit the exam that the US Open was, they knew, as Trevino used to say, these fairways are so narrow, you got to walk single file down them. And that's what it was. It was 20 yards to 25 yards. That was the exam of a US Open. Whatever happened to that? Yeah. Why are we now all playing into the hands of the power hitters?
Are you facing 6 months of lobbying now from potential captains for 2020?
No, there's no lobbying going on. In fairness, I've never been lobbied by anybody about trying to put a word in for me.
Sure, he knows. We all know. Yeah, like
I didn't want.
No one can lobby Padraig Harrington away from him. You know. Padraig said a couple of weeks on the show he wants 2020. I mean, I would think, given his legacy in Ryder Cup and his career, when Padraig wants it, he'll have a very good chance of getting it.
Of course he would. You know, he's favourite with the bookies. I don't even know if they're still taking bets on him. I think he's that much of a favourite. Mm. And with his record, his CV, his brightness, his understanding, he's been a vice-captain now twice. He's been three vice-captain twice. And this is his second time as a vice-captain, I think, yeah. He's been hugely important in Ryder Cup successes. He's a big part of the tour. He's still relative with the current players. He ticks all the boxes, of course. Why wouldn't we look at somebody like Padraig? It's a natural graduation.
Yeah.
And what we have in the European Tour that they've copied in America is this succession plan. You know, we got some great succession plan going on. You know, I was part of that succession plan with two vice captaincies. Thomas, I think, is on four vice captaincies before he's graduated to captain. Darren was vice captains, you know, and we'll continue to do that. It's really important to learn and get in behind the ropes and be there without your golf clubs and sense what's going on and see what's going on and be current. Because being a vice captain means you're current if you then, you know, elevate into the broader captaincy for the next edition. Whoever the next captain may be has got to really formulate a really tough plan to go into the Lion's Den and try to execute away from home, because it's so difficult. But I mean, what a feather in his cap, whoever the next captain should be. To be an away-winning captain is going to be something special.
Yeah, for sure. You've had an unbelievably long week and you're still talking about the Ryder Cup at 8:45. So many thanks for making time for us. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, really. Good luck with everything and thank you.
Thanks a million. So Whistling Straits in 2 years, it's been fun. That's us done at the Ryder Cup for this evening as well. We'll see you.
The Ryder Cup on Off The Ball. Brought to you by Now TV. Only pay for the days you want and stream all 10 Sky Sports channels with the Now TV Sky Sports Pass.